Okay, good afternoon. I think this mic is live. Welcome to our session that's organized by the African American Collaborative Obesity Research Network, of which I'm founder and chair. My name is Shariki Kumanyika, and I'd like to start by thanking the food nutrition section for giving us a spot on the program to talk about our research. This is the second time we've had a chance to talk about this line of research, which is relatively new to us. Last year, we presented in a session about some work we had done previously, and we'll build on that work and then talk about some new work in this session. So I'm going to be the moderator and then also the first presenter. So the motivation for this work is the high levels of obesity in the African American community. In particular, African-American women with 50% with a BMI over 30, and about 26% of 6 to 19-year-old girls with a BMI above the 95th percentile. So it's a problem that affects a large part of the African-American community. And we haven't focused as much on men, on black men, but it turns out that in the highest income group, some of the more recent Haynes data show 45% with a BMI over 30 of black men. We think that this one of the drivers of the obesity levels could be the adverse food marketing environment, the inequities, as we call them, food store availability, what's in the stores, the types of restaurants, fast food restaurants as opposed to others that have a different mix of options, the types of products that are available in food stores, the types of products promoted in various channels, and advertising exposures, particularly on television, and through digital channels that are geared towards African American adults and youth. So this isn't the only issue in the black community for obesity, but we think that if we could improve the mix of foods that are in the environment, then people would be more likely to make choices conducive to weight control and to health. So here are some of the data just to show it's broken down by poverty income ratio. So near the poverty line, less than 130%, or in between that and the higher bracket of 350%, you can see the data for adult males and females, and even in the highest income group of women, it's 48%, and the white women are there for comparison. And in children, you can see 20% or more of girls, and this is 2 to 19, so it's higher when you restrict it to 6 to 19. Compared to white females. So even within the obesity epidemic, this is a particular group at high risk. We began our formal exploration of these marketing issues. Sonia Greer, who's going to be the discussant for this section, we did a review of issues for targeting interventions to low-income and ethnic minority children, and we identified targeted marketing, targeted advertising, and food availability issues as one of the things that you might change through policy levers or environmental interventions. And then we followed that up in 2008 by publishing in the AJPH a systematic review to find all the published evidence that we could find and see if, in fact, the impression of a worse environment, any way you define the marketing environment in African-American communities, was really valid. And the studies we found confirmed that availability and exposure to promotion and so forth were adverse. So the work that we're doing is guided by this paradigm, and this is our community-centered version of the paradigm, where we look at historical factors, historical environments, if you will, context, current environments, you see environments to navigate, and psychosocial cultural environments at the top, which you call, in talking with lay people, influences of culture and mindset, which relate to both the historical and social factors that have shaped them and to how people navigate their environments. And so we put the eating, habits and physical activity that determine weight and other health issues in the context of these environmental factors. And we've been focusing on questions about whether people have resources to buy healthy food, for example, what type of food is available, how much it costs, who's sponsoring community events, which is a form of promotion. That you, as you know, it's not not just charity when the big companies sponsor concerts and community programs. And then the actual messages that people get from outdoor ads and TV and so forth. So the overview of the work, we're going to give you today some insights about how the environments are perceived by African-American adult and youth consumers and talk about the implications for achieving a more healthy mix of food. The research is done, our research evaluation dissemination corps is based in Philadelphia at the University of Pennsylvania, where I am, and then we have sub-grants and collaborators in four areas, in Baltimore, Maryland, Durham, North Carolina, Birmingham, Alabama, and Chicago, Illinois, and we call this the Food Research for African-American Marketing Equity Initiatives, and other members of our research network are also involved in this work, but this is the work that we sponsor and coordinate directly out of our site in Philadelphia. This is what I change. So last year we talked about results of site-specific studies of perceptions of marketing environments, and this first presentation that I'm going to give will relate to influences across the sites about price and other types of perceived value in purchasing food based on those same qualitative studies. And then follow up, we did a pilot to see if we gave people specific marketing scenarios, how would they react to certain types of ads or certain types of practices of marketers. We refined that protocol, and it was repeated in the Baltimore group, or Prince George's County, Maryland, actually, and in Durham, to get the consumer perceptions of marketing scenarios. And then this protocol, we discovered that it might be interesting to sensitize people, tell them a little bit about marketing, and then bring them back to see if that changed their opinions about the marketing scenarios, to stimulate some reflection and give them a little more information. So that's what you'll hear about today. We also have exposed retail food retailers and policymakers in Chicago and Birmingham to the same scenarios. We're not going to present that today. That work is recently completed, but we will be presenting that work or publishing it down the line. So altogether, we think that we can get insights from the community perspective on a lot of key policy questions, different issues, and find out what some of the evidence gaps are that will inform further research that we do in this area. So I will begin by changing the slide and giving the first presentation, which is from the top of this graphic, the multi-site exploration of price and perceived value. So the authors on this work, all of them are actually present in the room, and some of them will be presenting today. I have no disclosures, no relationships that I care to talk about for disclosure. No, just kidding. It's hard to do that slide with a straight face. So the motivation for this work related to the other aspect of marketing, food prices. So we found good evidence in the systematic review about where the stores are, what's in the stores, the types of products, and so forth. But there's this other piece of the four P's of marketing, which is cost. And we did not find a consistent evidence when we looked at food costs in the systematic review. The studies basically said, the first one from LA, that there was maybe a broader range of prices, some higher and some lower than other neighborhoods. When you compare African Americans with other neighborhoods, the people, researchers in Chicago made a market basket based on the Thrifty Food Plan, And they found that the price of that was lower in the African-American neighborhood, but it depended on what type of stores you would go to. And the third was a study of fast food prices and found that they were actually higher in African-American neighborhoods. And so this work didn't lead to specific hypotheses, but it did lead us to want to know, well, what is this issue with food price? And is there something systematically disadvantaging African-American consumers related to food price? How do they view food price? So the design and objectives are on this slide. We took the data from all the sites to explore perspectives on food prices within the context of what stores were available, the products that were available, the shopping patterns and resources people had, and then there are other priorities, and this is an important part of this. What else besides price would matter when making food purchases? So just to remind you that this is multi-site, but the specific sites had different protocols and collected their data, tailoring it to the local communities, and all this work was community partnered in the localities. So in Baltimore, the focus was on food purchases of adolescent girls, but with focus groups and photo elicitation of both adolescents and adults. In Birmingham and Chicago, the same protocol was applied, included caregiver interviews to learn how families' purchases were influenced by the food environments. And the third protocol, the fourth site in Durham, really focused on where, and some of you might have been here last year and heard about that, how do children influence what their caregivers are buying, the preferences and some of those issues, and using some focus groups and interviews with the youth and the caregivers. The data analysis was a conventional qualitative content analysis. We used in vivo 8 for coding of the data. The data were coded within the sites first, and then we looked across sites for commonalities. There were 4 coders, a lead researcher, Katie DeSantis. Oh, that's right. She's the author who's not here because she just had a baby. Sorry. She led the coding, and we had trained coders to work on this. Weekly team meetings to discuss the data, to try to pull out themes. We did the checks for intercoder consistency, and eventually discussed and tried to triangulate across the different sites and the different themes. So there were 3 main themes that came out of the data that we, as we organized, what are we hearing from people? And so one was information about how low prices affected, or how people were seeking low prices, efforts to obtain an adequate amount of food at the desired dollar amount without consideration, without the ability in those scenarios to consider the health benefits or the child's preferences. Convenience was a strong theme and a value perceived by the respondents. Higher prices were more acceptable if they offered greater convenience, and convenience was defined as saving time or saving labor in food preparation. And the third was high prices. So there was talk about high prices across the different sites, a sense of being captive sometimes in neighborhoods, but the prices were high, but you needed to buy at those stores. So a lack of choice due to the food environment, the ability to work around that by shopping in other neighborhoods came out in Chicago, and in Durham, the potential to waste money by buying things that the children wouldn't eat was also a factor in how much you wanted to pay for food, say to try to get something healthier that might cost a little more, but then it's totally wasted. So the sub-themes under the low prices, I'll just show you all of them. Stretching dollars, even in people who were not very low income, because this was a diverse sample in terms of income, stretching the dollars, and then the feeling of a good deal, which came out in different ways. But the idea is that it's a low price, but it's what you want, or it feels like I'm being treated fairly in the marketplace with this low price. Effects of the low price food on health. So there was acknowledgement that, yes, it's cheap, but it may not be the best thing. and some frustration of being able to find healthier foods at low prices. And then the times when preferences would prevail if a child asked for something depended on the type of parenting style, some people saying that, you know, I have the resources here, I'm making the decisions, and other people feeling, well, I want to give it to them if I can. So some of the verbatims from the research, people mentioning the economy, as the economy is today, we're gravitating to the less costly foods, and we're buying things like McDonald's and churches because they're less than $5. And the second one, yeah, I definitely believe that they have those two-for-ones and everything. Companies might think it's a good idea, but I think it's really hurting you at the end health-wise because you don't really need to double Big Macs for $5 or something like that. So paying for convenience had three elements that came to us out of the data. One is that people are so busy that they have to rely on convenient foods that are quick, fast, and easy, whether or not that's what they really want, that cooking takes time, and things that took time to cook were less preferred, although people realize that there may be negative health effects. And the third point related to that, when that convenience, you could get a lot of things at low cost that were convenient, but foods prepared at home would be healthier. So some examples, it's easier to get fast food because everybody's pinched for time. So that would be the challenge that most parents have. They want their children to eat healthy food, but just the convenience of being able to pick up something, grab and go, so the children will be on time for their practices or whatever they're in. Or on talking about vending machine options, a bad thing because it's not healthy and it's not good for you, and eventually it can catch up with you, even though it's fast and you can get it easy, it's not the best thing for your body. So people knew that they were making trade-offs. So high prices, a captive to high prices and unhealthy food. Environments are sometimes described as having low quality unhealthy food and unfair prices, high unfair prices. Advertisements with visual effects, celebrities, price promotions, and music influence the consumption behavior, and the advertised brands cost more. Another theme that we put with the high prices, people describe shopping at the less convenient stores or at multiple stores to work around high prices in their immediate neighborhoods. And then the it's healthier, will they eat it? The difficulty of finding healthy foods that their children would actually eat. So there's some overlap between these themes. Examples, the Chuck E. Cheese, the respondent says, Chuck E. Cheese costs a little bit more than this cheese over here, and you can just have the same thing, and actually you can get more cheese if you don't get Chuck E. Cheese's face on the cheese. But the kid wants Chuck E. Cheese face on. And the other comment, the meat might be higher than at one supermarket, and that's why I move around and buy it. I go to this supermarket because to get the meat because I know I'm going to get a good deal, but then I go to another supermarket because the seasonings are going to be cheaper than supermarket A seasonings. So the summary of this presentation is that people were giving priority to saving money. It was interesting that even though these studies, none of them was designed to look at price, saving money and stretching dollars came up repeatedly in the data and getting a good quantity for their dollar. Frustration with the unhealthful nature of many of the low-cost and convenient foods. This was a part of frustration expressed when describing other environmental constraints in their neighborhoods or the school. And the importance of prices was expressed, but in a way that revealed how multidimensional it was, that people were thinking about a lot of different things as they looked at the price and weighing that against other considerations. Our interpretation of this is that price is very salient in the sample, even though most of them were not on public assistance and or were not receiving any type of public assistance, and half were college educated. It resonates with what we see in the literature about the higher cost of healthy foods and the perception that people have that healthy foods cost more. And the ultimate conclusion is that even if we put more stores in neighborhoods, if price is really driving purchases, we may not accomplish things by availability, by increasing availability, if we don't pay a lot of attention to the prices of the foods that we're making available to people. So thank you very much. I want to acknowledge all the collaborators at the different sites, and thank the funder, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, who funds our network and through which we fund the field work on food price issues. Thank you.